Vajrahasyam class, November 1st, 2010. We're continuing on the very wonderful instructions Bhaktivinoda is giving us on how to quickly come to the platform of Prem Nam Bhajan, and experience the beautiful Sambhog Leelas of Radha Govinda Yugal in the groves of Vrindavan, when we chant Shudanam in our Bhav Deha, Siddha Deha. We experience that all the different feelings arising in the hearts of Radharani and her devotees, her sakis. Text 4 of chapter 8 of Bhajarasyam, he's emphasizing humility. And humility is the foundation of bhakti. And it is by humility that bhakti increases. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami gives a definition of humility. Humility means when a person has all good qualities, but feelings arise in his heart of being unqualified. When a person has all good qualities, but feelings arise in his heart of being unqualified, wretched, and inferior, this is called humility. So this is, in other words, if we have nothing, we have no exaltation, and we have no aishvarya. We have no wealth, no beauty, no high birth, no wisdom, knowledge, strength, any of the opulences or aishvarya, sadaishvarya purna. We're garib, we're poor, and we're daridra. We're a low-class person with ugly bodily features and no wisdom or good health, are all seemingly a bad bargain. Now, for us to be proud, or if we're humble, let's say, if we act in a humble way or speak in a humble way, it doesn't mean so much, because we have nothing, there's nothing within us to be proud of. There's no cause, we don't have anything in our hand to be proud of. But in English they say that pride, ego, is such a mysterious character that even if someone has nothing, they'll be proud of nothing. Pride is all pervasive in the conditioned soul. Pride is like breathing. So the phrase they have, at least in Old English, is the pauper is proud of his penny. The pauper is proud of his penny. The garib is proud of his rupee. He may only have one rupee or one penny, which is nothing, but I'm a wretched poor fellow, but I have one rupee, and this other wretched poor fellow doesn't have any, huh? Pride is a very mysterious attribute of the desire for the living entity to be God, to be the enjoyer, to establish himself. God means supreme. So the push, we're always being pushed by our false ego to establish our supremacy. And when our ego becomes purified, then we're pushed by our purified ego to become a servant of the supreme, and become a servant of the representatives of the Supreme, which means we become a servant of God and His devotees. And the opposite of that is the pride that I am the Supreme and everyone should bow down to me, and I have so many wonderful things in my hand and in my command which will bolster my false sense of supremacy and thereby inflate my pride. Because the Goswamis, they had everything going for them. They were handsome, born in high-class Saraswat Brahmins from South India, and they migrated to East Bengal. And they were high-class Brahmins. They were very wealthy. They worked for the king as prime minister and finance minister. And they had very beautiful bodily features. And they were very famous and learned. They had so many good qualities. But they were so humble. They had so many good qualities, but yet they were humble. They were respect, dira dira jana priyo priyakaro. They were And it's interesting that Sanatana Goswami describes humility not as a way of speaking. Oh, he speaks in a very quiet, humble way. He's so humble. He never raises his voice. He's so humble.
You stupid!
Oh, he's always yelling. He's so boisterous. He's so loud. He's so aggressive. He's not humble. Someone might be very aggressive and very loud and very boisterous in correcting his students or teaching, and maybe the most humble person in the world. Because he's not saying that it's the quality of speech that determines humility, nor is even the physical posture or presentation of one's being or his dealings in the world, but it's a feeling in his heart. And oftentimes, this feeling, of course, Bhav precedes action. We have feelings and we act upon our feelings. We generally have this idea of thinking, feeling, and willing. We have some concept or some thought, because thought generates a certain amount of energy, mind power, mind over matter, power of the mind. They have books like this. Power of concentration, the power of the mind. Because mind is an electric dynamo. The mind, mind being brain. The brain has so many electric connections and neurons firing here and there, sparking away. With all their nervous connections. So it's a lot of energy there. And that energy gets behind the desires, and then that builds up a momentum, and then momentum of thinking increases the thinking, and then we develop feelings. Our heart mixes up with our desires and our mind and our emotions, and all packs together and creates more inertia, I'll say more kinetic energy and momentum. Then all of that combination of thought, desire, and feelings expresses itself as willing, action, thinking, feeling, willing. So bhav precedes action. So in this case, in the case of a humble person, his heart is overruling his intelligence, because he feels humble. He feels that I really don't have... But his intelligence is telling him, no, but you have a high birth and you have good knowledge and wealth and a high position and you're famous. But then the heart is saying, no, but actually what am I compared to God? Or what am I? And then he becomes very humble. He has all good qualities, but feelings arise in his heart of being unqualified, wretched, and inferior. This is called humility. In other words, humility is the utmost anxiety to attain Bhagavan. Because we say that we may have so many materially valuable assets and attributes and characteristics and qualities, but if they aren't connected to God, they are simply a string of zeros. And Prabhupada has emphasized this. If you have a bank account with 0.0000 rupees, then you have nothing in the bank. So if you have so many Janmaishwarya Shruta Shubir, you have all what is considered materially valuable and highly desirable assets of beauty, high birth, knowledge, wealth, wisdom, etc. That means that's zero. It all adds up to zero. There's no God there. The integer, the number one or two, that's God. So a devotee thinks, oh, maybe I have all these things, but where is my Krishna? Where is my God realization? Where is that wealth? Oh, am I seeing God? Is God speaking to me? It's like we heard this flute player today. I came back. And I was thinking, when I was getting ready, it came in my mind, we heard this flute player today. We heard this flute player today. We saw him pass by our door. I wonder where he lives. All afternoon I heard the flute. Maybe he was just out in the courtyard in his palace, walking around after lunch playing his flute and practicing. But I heard it, because the wind was blowing from Nandagram, and it blew over to Varsana. And I was hearing the sound of the flute, and I was thinking, where does that, that flute player lives in our neighborhood. I'd really like to know where he lives. I'd really like to know that flute player. So all these ideas were coming, which is, of course, Udipan for Radhakrishna's Purva Rag, falling in love, which was precipitated by the very sound of Krishna's flute and the sight of his luscious, gorgeous form. And so we had a touch of that reality today. We've been here for, in this particular ashram, for 6 years. But this morning, this is what happened, because we came back from snan around sunrise, and then we were in the yard and we heard this flute, like a bamboo flute. And I said, that sounds like a live flute. And I asked, is that live or is it tape? And everyone said, it's live, it's someone's playing. Very nice playing, and a small flute, like Vamshi Dari. Then we all cocked our ears, just like cows. You know, whatever food was in our mouths, we stopped chewing. And we cocked in our ears, fixed in that direction, and we were all looking. It's coming from, it's there, it's over there. And our ears were catching that sound and bringing that sound to our hearts, and our hearts were saying, very nice. Our hearts were saying, I accept, I accept, I accept. Our mind was saying, I like it, I like it. More, more, anior. And as we listen, it's there. No, it's there, but it's coming here. It's getting louder, which means the sound is coming. If the sound's getting louder, it means the sound's coming closer. And who's ever making the sound is coming closer. Come on, come on. Hey, Saki, what are you doing? Forget about my dressing. Let's go. Go see who's playing. Who's playing that wonderful, sweet, seductive, attractive, enchanting sound of the flute? And we ran to the door, and I stopped, and I turned to the voice. I said, maybe when I open the door, we'll see Krishna walking down the street. You know, with blue skin, and beautiful yellow dhoti, and so and we were so much anticipation, so much with kanti tabhav, you know, yearning, anxiety. We opened the door, we ran on the street, and there's a guy about 6 feet 2 inches tall, very slender, kind of bluish black skin, and long wavy curly hair with these lotus eyes and some flowers in his top knot. And just walking down the street like this, because when you play the flute and walk, you have to kind of walk like this. He's just sauntering and wandering down the street, a very beautiful figure. And then Brajman said, look, he has yellow cloth. Because he had a white dhoti, lungi, and a yellow chadar. I said, that's not. And he was dark in complexion, but dark black, dark brown and not black. And he was Bengali, not Brajbasi. But we were transfixed and captivated just looking at him. And without even thinking, he got nearby and I just paid obeisance. I just thought, I was so much thankful and appreciative of him submerging me in the ocean of the possible reality of a purified soul. As a purified soul in pure bhava, he will see Krishna someday walking down the Prem Gully and Man Gully of Vrindavan and hear that first to hear the transcendental flute. The first experience anyone has in Boma Vrindavan and it's in Madhurya Bhav is hearing the transcendental flute of Krishna. First hearing, then seeing. First Shabda, then Rupam. This is there. You can read Gita Mala for confirmation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kamala Mandri Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living in Boma Vrindavan for 12 years or so without seeing Krishna. And then heard the flute. And then got to see and serve Krishna. So this is, everything begins with Shabda. Anavriti Shabda says it. Creation begins with Shabda. Creation is based on Shabda, and destruction is based on Shabda, and maintenance is based on Shabda. Sound is the basis of reality. Sound is the basis of creation. Om Shabda. First thing, what did Brahma, first Brahma saw Vishnu, saw Krishna? No. He heard sound, ta, pa. Then he did ta, pa, tapasya. Then he heard the sound of Krishna's flute. And the flute did everything. as the flute does in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan, Brajagokul, the flute does everything. The flute brings out the cow, takes out the cows. The flute pulls out the gopis. The flute wakes up the coward boys. The flute alerts the parents. Everyone, everything and everyone in Vrindavan is controlled and moving by the flute sound called Venunad. So take it beyond that realm to the next lower level. It's all going by sound. And the Bible says the same thing. The Old Testament says, in the beginning there was the Word. Word means sound, shabda. In the beginning. In the beginning there was the Word. So the beginning of everything is the Word of God. A person with humility is without false ego, even though he possesses all good qualities. Only humility can attract Krishna's mercy. And genuine humility only appears when prema is fully ripe. To attain such humility, the Bhava Bhakta prays, O Pranvallava, I have no attachment for you, and I am incapable of performing shravan and other practices in the ninefold path of devotion. My meditation is not unbroken like that of the gyanis. I do not perform service according to Varnashram. I have not taken birth in a high-class family, and I have not performed any pious activities. My hope is solely dependent on your mercy, which all the Mahajans glorify. You are the master of the wretched, and you bestow your mercy upon them. Sanatana Goswami possesses all virtues, yet he is filled with the utmost humility. A Bhava Bhakta performs abundant service. He serves day and night in his attempt to please the Lord, but he always thinks, I perform no seva at all. The sadhaka's only desire is to perform prem seva, pure bhakti, that is devoid of karma and gyan. That is sarup siddha bhakti. And it is attained only through shravana kirtan and so forth. If a person is too attached to karma, whatever little devotion is in his heart disappears. And if someone desires material gain, adoration, and fame, bhakti devi neglects that person. Bhakti only increases in the heart of one who is humble and sincere, and only humility that is thoroughly devoid of pride causes the flowing current of mercy to swell. The method of performing Nam Sarana is to chant the holy name while feeling more humble than a blade of grass. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has prayed, Trinada Pi Sunichena, Turai Vasahishana, Amanina Amanidena Kirtaniya Sadahari, Urdva Bahu Karika Hon, Shuna Sarvaloka, Nam Sutre Ganti Parakante He Shloka. After the conclusion of the Shikshastakam prayers, Krishna's Kaviraj says this, Prabhu Agyaya Kara E Shloka Acharan Avashya Paibe Tabe Sri Krishna Charan. Translation. Considering oneself to be even lower and more worthless than an insignificant grass that has been trampled beneath everyone's feet. Being more tolerant than a tree, being prideless and offering respect to everyone according to their respective positions, one should continually chant the holy name of Sri Hari. Well, this is Mahaprabhu speaking. Raising my hands, Mahaprabhu declares, everyone please hear me. For continuous remembrance, string this shloka, Trinada Pisunichena, on a thread of the holy name and wear it around your neck. One must strictly follow the principles given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this verse. If one simply follows in the footsteps of Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis, he will certainly attain the ultimate goal of life, the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. That's our desirable goal. Lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So this is a reminder, of course, this verse is reminding us, because until humility actually takes over the kingdom of our heart, it is a constant stress that we face, that we're humble for a short time and then we become proud again. It's always like a seesaw. Sometimes humility is up and sometimes pride is up. Because in the beginning we hear about, yes, we should be humble, and we don't really understand what it means. And that's why it's very interesting. The definition says it's a genuine feeling that comes in the heart. You can't force it. It's not like you lift weights, and anybody picks up weights and they lift for 2 months and they get a muscle. Get some muscles. But this humility is one of the spiritual qualities. Humility. There are 26 qualities. And this is a spiritual quality because we see that it's not different from prema. Prema is the most spiritual entity, our most spiritual, what you can say, attribute, the love of God. And prema and humility are synonymous. So genuine humility as we know it in Gaudiya Vaishnavism is actually a spiritual quality. It can't be pretended. You try to be humble, and that's good. We should try to control ourselves and act in a humble way. That's called self-control. Otherwise, we're just out of control like animals. So we exercise discretion and self-control and proper behavior. But nevertheless, it will take, at least I can say, to enter the real meaning of humility, it takes 20, 30 years of serious bhajan and developing so much understanding of your real position and of others and basic realization about as I mentioned yesterday, about Krishna's presence everywhere. You actually realize it. And you feel it and you see it. And it doesn't come easy. But Prabhupada has built many, he has presented to the society of his disciples many practices. He's introduced many practices which are part of Gaudiya Sampradaya, which are very conducive to softening the heart and breaking down the intensely fortified fortress of pride that we surround ourselves with. Like a king stays inside his fort, his fortress, and he surrounds that fortress with so many moat full of alligators and then electric fences and minefields, and he wants to prevent everyone from getting to him and taking over his kingdom or killing him. So he lives in a fort. So we live in a fortress of our false ego, the living entity. So to knock down that fortress or to dismantle that fortress takes a lot of endeavor. So Prabhupada, he said we should call each other, we should address each other as Prabhu, at least the men. And then Prabhupada explained this once on a tape. He said, Prabhu doesn't mean, Prabhu, Gurudas, he gave an example, Gurudas Prabhu, and that's maybe 67, 68 in San Francisco. When we address each other, the devotees, as Prabhu, it doesn't mean, Gurudas Prabhu, take my shoes. Take my shoes, pick them up, carry them over there. Prabhupada himself is saying this, understanding the mentality of how we were using this word, Prabhu, oh Prabhu, oh Prabhu, which means, oh, Prabhupada said, Prabhu means you are my master. Prabhu means, you're my master. How can I serve you? Not, oh Prabhu, please serve me. Oh Prabhu, can you do this for me? Oh Prabhu, can you carry this here? Oh Prabhu, can you... So Prabhupada, he kind of showed us, what is your idea? Your false ego is so powerful. Even you come into, I give you this word. With this word, you're supposed to understand. If I'm saying Prabhu, that means, who am I? That means, if I'm calling you Prabhu, if I'm saying, hey boss, that means that I'm the servant, you're the boss. So we say, hey Prabhu, but Prabhupada himself, he saw in his own disciples, or us disciples, that we were calling each other Prabhu, but feeling and thinking that I am your Prabhu, I am your master, and you should serve me. Oh Prabhu, please save me a plate of prasadam. I have to go on Sankirtan. Oh Prabhu, please, go to downtown and buy this and that for me. So we take advantage of our general tendency to engage everyone as our servant, even in the spiritual society. Whereas the real devotee thinks, I'm going out, and my guru has asked me to go somewhere. Why do I have to make arrangements for my sleeping and eating? Krishna says he'll take care of that. Yoga kshemam mahamyaham. Like one devotee, he had to pick up the flowers, so he left early in the morning, went to the airport, and he came back after breakfast in Los Angeles, and he missed breakfast. I missed breakfast. It's not bad to miss a meal. It's really not bad. It's not that bad if you miss one meal. Nobody ever died. It's actually very good because you really eat a lot the next one. And your appetite will be twice as good and you'll digest. So he went, he missed breakfast, he came back and no one saved anything and he didn't ask anyone and that was that. Okay, so breakfast is at 9, he got back at 10, lunch is at 2, so he can live, I think, from 10 to 2, no? So he happened to see Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, or maybe Prabhupada didn't see him. So I didn't see you in breakfast. And then he said, oh, Prabhupada, I went to the airport to get the flowers. So I just thought that, if your guru calls you, if your guru calls you for prasadam, you take prasadam. If he doesn't call you, you fast. So I just thought like that, now maybe at lunch I'll get something. Then Prabhupada said, no, I'm always calling you for prasadam. I'm always calling you. Don't think I'm not calling. Sometimes I don't call you. I'm always calling you to take prasadam. It was like an exchange of a father and a son. Or a guru and his disciple. Miss Mudra Vatsalya, parental love. So this is the point that so the devotee will think, I'm serving my guru. And so Krishna doesn't know that I didn't have breakfast, or Krishna doesn't know that I'm hungry. And if I come back and there's no prasadam, okay, Haribol. If it's there, let me depend on Krishna, not my wit. I'm a very witty, clever fellow, so I can manipulate and arrange the environment in such a way that it always serves my cause and keeps me happy. Just depend on Krishna. We do our service and depend on Krishna. Because you see, when you meet the very advanced devotees, they don't want anyone to do anything for them. They don't want to take service from anyone. They consider like a great, this is terrible. And we're very hard pressed to try to find a way to serve them. A guru, someone who takes the post of guru, it's very painful. One of the most painful part about being in the position of a guru, or as an acharya, it's called acharya bhav, is that you have to allow people to serve you for their benefit. And it's very painful. Very painful. Now, when you join as brahmachari and like 27, 9, for like 30 years of your life, you're just rendering service and never taking service from anyone for 30 years, even before. I mean, a devotional life. Forget about previous life. And then someone says, "Oh, what can I do this and that?" And it's like. It's like it crushes your heart. And you can't bear it. It's just, and you even get irritable. Somebody wants to do some service and get out. And I've seen it when Narottam Das Thakur, he wanted to get diksha from Lokanath. He came to render service, and Lokanath got angry. He said, "Get out from here! I don't want to see." You know, he was afraid, so he just left that alone. He said, but he kept thinking, he's fine. I have to have some service connection with him, because if I don't render any humble service, how will I attract the attention of the guru? But he won't take any service. There's no way to serve him. This way, this side, that side. He's an impenetrable fortress of non-service access. No service access machine. NSM or something. No service machine. You can't serve him anytime, anywhere, anyhow. So then he's thinking, there's nothing I can do for his Bapu Seva. And I'm hearing him, but I can't do anything as Kutir, and if I get anywhere near a Kutir, try to sweep around the Kutir, he'll come out and find me and chastise me and chase me around, throw sticks at me. I mean, if you try to serve someone, they'll beat you. So in fact, you go to some Siddha Mahatmas, you try to do some service, what are you doing? Get out! I'll serve you. It's like that, to that extent. I'm not joking. Because they consider this is it. My bhakti is finished. Where is my trina bhav? Where is my dainyahood? My dainatwa, my tendency to be humble, it will be destroyed if I accept service. If I accept the least bit of service from anyone at any time, that's the end of my humility. This is the basic feeling. Can you imagine? This is bhakti proper. So, and thousands and thousands of Vaishnavas, only one unfortunate soul has to pose as the Acharya. And he has to accept that very painful post of accepting service in order to engage others, to connect them to Krishna, by giving them a chance to serve Krishna through the via medium of Guru. And that way the Guru acts as the representative of Krishna to bring about humility in the sadhaka. But 99% of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they should be in this consciousness that at any time, anywhere, anyhow, I don't want to accept service. Unless I absolutely have to, there's no other way that I'm going to die, or better let me die. And generally we think, no, I'm accepting, I'm engaging these people in service, it's good. Well, you know, first engage yourself in service. And then if we're engaged in, because many times we engage others in service that we could very well do ourselves, but we'd rather engage others. At any rate, this is an interesting point about humility. It's an unlimited subject, humility. Because it's all about consciousness. It's a spiritual quality. And how it interfaces with our material body and how it interfaces with our material mind and our dealings with the material world. It's almost like a phenomenal experience. It's very phenomenal. How when one is a living... When one becomes a living embodiment of a spiritual quality, it's quite a phenomenal expression. Humility is a spiritual quality, and then when that enters into this frame, material framework, and it's expressed, it's an amazing display of spirituality before our material eyes, to see a humble soul, how they speak, how they act, how they deal. And all of us are meant to be that. Lord Chaitanya has spoken this verse, and he's raised his arms and he's proclaimed loudly, "Listen, everyone." Because he says it. It's very interesting. He's saying that raising, he says, Lord Chaitanya says in Anti Lila chapter 20, Chaitanya Charitamrita. In other words, if someone raises their hands above their head, they're making quite a show. If I just sit here and say, you know, you should do this, it's important. You should do this, it's important! It's like, wow, that must be important. But there's all kinds of body language behind it. It says, Trinayana pi sunichena tulariva sishana. he should do this. It's, you know, he should be humble. And raising both his hands, everyone please hear me. Remember this at every second of your life, please remember this. Remember what? Take this verse that I'm telling you, Trinadapi Sunichena. This verse is like a flower. Take this verse on the thread of the holy name. Right? This is like a verse. On a thread. So the thread means when you string a garland, there's thread, right? String, thread. String means thread. String this verse on the thread of the holy name and wear it around your neck. So you have a flower and you put it with some string and then you make a garland and then you put it on the neck of, you know, your Krishna and take the prasad. So take this on the thread of the holy name. In other words, can you separate the thread from the flower? When the thread is passing through the flower, then the thread and the flower become one. There's a union there, the thread and the flower, to make a mala, pushpa mala. So the holy name is the thread and the flower is the verse, Trinadapi Sunichena. So there's a relationship, a synergy between the holy name and humility in the holy name. He says, wear it around your neck and constantly remember it. Constantly remember the shloka and constantly remember the thread that holds the shloka around your neck. The thread is the holy name. So, I mean, it's Kirtaniya Siddhanta. Because what's the conclusion of the verse? Kirtaniya Siddhahari. Sadahari, Sada means eternally, Kirtan Sada, and Trinadapi Sada. After concluding this verse, and Lord Chaitanya raises his hands and says, now, always chant the holy name and always be humble. Which means don't take service from anyone and render respect to everyone, love everyone and serve everyone. And what happens when humility, because humility is synonymous with prema. That's already been established everywhere. And prema is synonymous with seva. Yes? Prema seva. So if one's heart is full of humility, then he will see opportunities to serve at every moment. Just like if someone's heart is full of love for Krishna, Radharani's heart is full of love for Krishna, Krishna Prem. So at every moment of every day, she's seeing so many opportunities in so many ways by which she can serve Krishna and express her tendency to love and please him by rendering various forms of Prem Seva. When a sadhaka, when he becomes to this platform of Nishtha and going to Ruchi, and humility ceases, when humility ceases the kingdom of his heart and genuine humility starts to flow in waves in his mind, then he's always filled with enthusiasm to serve. Because he's full of humility. And we've already established that humility, service, and prema are all synonymous. Someone, oh, he's really humble. Does he do any service? No. Does he ever serve anybody? No. But he's really humble. You see the correlation? Very interesting. Interesting synergy. Humility, service, and love. And people say, oh, you don't have to do that. No, you're a sannyasi. Well, I thought we were supposed to be servant body veneer muktam tat parat vena nirmalam. I thought you and I were all the same. I thought we were das, das, and udas. No, but you're a big das. You're a swami das. You're guru das. Gopi Bhartu Padakamal, you're das, das, and das. Everyone is supposed to be, the last one is our position. Das, das, anudas. There's three mentioned there. Das, das, anudas. Why three? Das, das, anudas. So my position as in relation to this verse, which identifies me beyond all designations, beyond varnas and ashramas. What is that verse? Naham vipro, naham vipro nacha narapatir napi vaisho nashudro, naham varni nacha griha patir nova nashto yatirva, kentu pro dhyan nikala, paramananda, whatever, then kobi bartu padakamalir das das anadas. So I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. I simply absorbed in my blissful eternal identity, Paramananda. I am simply absorbed in my eternally blissful identity as a servant of the servant of the servant, as Prabhupada says in one tape. A servant of the servant of the servant 100 times removed. 100 times removed means a servant of the servant of the servant. I'm way back here in line for service. Because Das, Das, Anadas. So our position as a sadhak is we're the last Das because we're following, we should look around and say, who am I serving? And who is he serving? And am I serving someone now? And is he serving someone now? And if I'm not in line of Das, Das, Anadas, and if I'm out of that line, then I'm in the line of Bhoga. I'm enjoying. You know, then I'm Das, Das, Anobhog. Wait a minute, everyone's serving except me, because I'm the big guru, I'm the sannyasi, you know, and I'm enjoy. Because you see in some Gaudiya missions that because they're thinking like this and they're feeling like this is humility, that I'm in the last position of Das, 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 Anadas, that Anadas is me. So then because they're thinking like that and feeling that I'm a servant of the servant of the servants in this mission, this temple. So when a feast comes or when prasanna comes, then I have to serve them because I'm Das, Das, Anadas. We're talking about how the humble-hearted advanced Vaishnava wants to serve everyone. When Lord Krishna was arranging for the Brijvasis to worship Govardhan Hill instead of Indra, then he was directing Nanda Baba in the Anukut festival. And he said, you should make this big arrangement, offer all this food to Giriraj. Giriraj, Dharan, the key, Jai. Then afterwards, you should distribute all the anukut, all the food, all the mahaprasad, to all the brahmanas and all the different people, and everyone should be fed. And in Krishna's own words, he said, all the people should be fed sumptuously, like Giriraj Prasadam. And all the living entities should be fed, even down to the dogs, even down to the pigs and dogs. Everyone should be fed the mahaprasad. In Krishna's own words, said dogs, he says there. So even Krishna is thinking and that everyone should be served. He's not thinking, let me sit down and eat the big feast. So this is Krishna's own mood. So humility is something we have to hear about over and over again. And we have to practice being humble. And so as I mentioned, just to conclude, Prabhupada tried his best to make us and bring us to this point of understand what humility is, and he trained us to work with humble principles. Because the first thing is to actually bhakti begins with humility. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevya upadekshanti tegyanam gyaninas tafadarshana. Krishna says the beginning of bhakti is humility. Pranipatena, find a self-realized soul and surrender, lie down at his feet like a stick, like this. Pranipatena, or as Sanatana Goswami, Trina, Danta Trinadaki, he said, Danta Trina, they were holding a piece of straw. Sanatana Goswami came to Mahaprabhu, biting a piece of straw between his teeth and fell before his feet, showing the utmost humility that even the straw is worthy of my worship. I am lower than the straw in the street. I utterly and absolutely submit myself at your feet. Karpanya dosha bhata sambhava. Prachamitam Shalimantvam Prapanam. Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, he finally surrendered in the second chapter to Krishna. He said, I am Shishyastehamam Shalimam Tvam Prapanam. Shishyastvam Mam. I am your Shishya. Prapanam. I surrender myself at your lotus feet. Now do whatever you want. What do you want me to do? How can I serve you? How can I please you? What do you want from me? Body, mind, words, everything is yours. So this is the meaning. So even in the very beginning stage of approaching Guru is Guru Parashraya. Guru Parashraya means Pranipatena, to surrender absolutely at the feet of the Guru. And then, so everything begins with humility, and bhakti begins with humility. Bhakti is maintained by humility. Bhakti is accelerated by humility, and the perfection of bhakti is perfect, pure, perfect humility, which is synonymous with Krishna Prema. So humility is definitely a very much a concomitant part of the bhakti bhajan, which is our Premnam bhajan, which means bhakti bhajan. So Prabhupada had everyone address each other as Prabhu, my master. And then he instituted another very powerful practice called offering obeisances. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kapa truvyascha. Show respect to, so offer, put your head at the feet of your god brother or god sister. And put your feet in the dust, put your head in the dust of their feet. And beg, please, I am your servant, please engage me. The servant falls at the feet of the master and prays for mercy and prays for engagement. So that is the mood of the devotees that Prabhupada tried to create. Respect your god brothers, love your god brothers, serve your god brothers in a humble, genuine, devotional way. And by this practice of humility and by this practice of honoring with your body, show honor and respect to your god brothers with your physical body by falling in the dust of their feet. And show honor and respect to your god brothers with your mental body or your mind by speaking words of humility and submission by saying, my dear Prabhu, O Prabhu, Das, Das, and Das, O Prabhu, how I may serve you. Hey Baba, carry my bag. Hey Baba, open my door. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we'll continue. How to attain Swarup Siddhi as a Manjari. Tomorrow's verse describes, of course this is all part and parcel of the same idea, but we're talking about the bhajan. These are tips on bhajan to come to the level of prema, to develop a certain position of the heart and mind. And then tomorrow's verse, text 5, he talks about the Siddhi Parichaya, the identity of the perfect soul. The Abhiman or mentality or eternal identity of a Manjari.